Odd people, thanks for coming back for another episode of Odd Pod. I'm so happy I got to interview composer and pianist Jonathan Hanau this week. Jonathan's works have been performed by the Civic Orchestra of Chicago, Ursa Ensemble, Disquiet Music Ensemble, 20 Plus New Music Ensemble at DePaul, Lakeshore Rush, Lake Effect Quartet, and the CCMP Players of Boston Conservatory. And he performs regularly with Ursa Ensemble and Disquiet Music Ensemble.
Welcome to Odd Pod.
Yeah, welcome to Odd Pod.
My name. Today we have
Mr. Jonathan Hanau, or Hanu, as apparently some people say it, because I don't know why.
Thank you for having me.
We're sitting here with Jonathan and with his lovely crocheted Cthulhu and his Cthulhu coffee cup, and I'm really a big fan. And also, wait, just to like give you an idea of what's in the room, because it's pretty great. We have this red toy piano over here by the TV, in between the TV and the fish tank where there's a turtle. Also, what's your turtle's name?
Peg.
Peg! I like it.
Pegasaurus Rex.
I love it. And there's like another toy piano sort of like behind me to my left. It's got skulls on it.
Those are actually called death whistles.
What?
Yeah, death whistles.
Death whistles?
So should I like try it now?
Wait, actually, yeah, that would be amazing.
Grab the black one and the orange one, because they both sound different. I'm actually using these in the piece that I'm writing for Civic right now.
Oh my god, what?
Yeah, these sound like death incarnate.
Oh my god, I'm ready.
Ready? That's that one. Macy hates this.
I feel like it's probably the sound that is made when you open the Ark.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, what is it? The Pandora's box or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So those are amazing. Civic piece.
I'm so excited. Wait,
to that.
I'm gonna ask you about your Civic piece in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always start out asking people, like, how did you first get into music? That could be a very long story, but that's fine.
All right. Let me see if I can remember.
Like, as a wee one.
as a wee lad.
Yes, exactly.
Let's see. So, funny enough, I actually do remember the date of my first piano lesson ever.
Whoa.
So, that was October 23rd, 1997. Holy crap. I'm coming along my 20th anniversary of playing the piano.
Aww.
Yeah, so that's
the
exciting.
The piano.
And now I'm a toy pianist.
And now you're a toy pianist.
Well, still pianist too, but...
Right.
Anyway, that was the first time I took my lesson, and loved it as a kid. Obviously, I stuck around with it.
You're like,
when I was a teenager, though, when I was like 13, I was like, I shouldn't swear, right?
No, you can. It's fine.
Oh, okay.
I just marked it as explicit so that anybody can say anything they want. Because half the time, I don't know what's coming out of my mouth.
You know,
so.
Fuck the system. I'm going to be a rebel. And like, I was a skateboard rat. and I played piano. Like, my mom would just yell at me, like,
right.
Practice the piano. I'm like, fine. So I practiced piano through my teenage years unwillingly, but I'm glad I did.
Right, right.
And then... sophomore year of high school or freshman year, I can't remember, but I went to a music festival that I can no longer remember what it was.
But apparently
that,
it was a big deal.
It was, yeah, that actually was the defining factor that I was like, I want to be a pianist.
That's really
or at
funny.
Least I want to be a musician. I met a bunch of like crazy like Juilliard pianists and I suck, man, I gotta practice.
That's like one way to get motivated.
Yeah. it motivated me enough to just like practice a lot more, especially when I got home. And then I went to Tanglewood the year afterwards did the Tanglewood festival in my junior year, and so like that was huge in my upbringing too. And then I also was at the Hart School of Music because I was in Connecticut at that time.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I lived in New Jersey. I was born in Miami, lived in Jersey from, like, age 2 to 10, and then Connecticut, like, 11, like, 10 to 18.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So, it's, like, all over the place.
Yeah.
But anyway, in Connecticut, I went to the Hart School of Music, the college for the pre-college prep music program there.
Yeah.
And I took piano lessons there. So I was in, like, the theory and history course and stuff like that. And I got, like, super into John Cage and, like, Schoenberg and stuff. Like, I was like, man, I love this weird shit. Like, I guess, quote unquote, weird. I mean, I think it's beautiful, but whatever. Social.
Weird in quotes.
Weird in quotes. Yeah. I'm just...
It is an audio format.
But yeah, I got really into like just sound and noise and stuff like that, and loved Ligeti. Like George Ligeti became huge for me. John Cage, I read a lot of his like writings and got really into the idea of silence and. And like silence and music became very important, along with like obviously moments of sound and stuff like that. And so that kind of like was that was a lot of fun for me, like especially in high school. I got really into all those things that like I think this is so dumb, but I guess it's like my again that rebellious quote like, unquote putting quotes on the rebellious thing because me, but. I was like really into stuff that people thought was ugly or like socially like not beautiful, like whatever the constructs of beauty
like
were.
Not I traditionally was, like aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, I was like super into like avant-garde art. I loved Pollock. Mark Rothko is huge for me. And it's like I really just love those strong colors and like those just, you know, like one shade of thing on a wall. And I'm like, this is beautiful. And people are like... Why didn't I think of that? And it's like, well, you didn't. Like, so I got really into all that stuff of just being like, I'm going to play Schoenberg because you think it's ugly and I think it's pretty. Fuck you. But anyway, then I went to, I started off college actually at Boston University doing piano performance. And there... I took a theory with composer Ketty Nez, who was the composition teacher there as well. And she was actually the start for me of like my composition career. That was around sophomore year of college for me. And I was just like, I started writing some songs. Like she, because like in her class once, she's like, you know, if you're interested in composition, why not like try writing some like songs, find some text, because in a way, like you just have to, you look at the text and you're, your mind will kind of have like what the music should be set to.
Yeah.
So it's like almost, it's like a gateway to at least try your hand. Cause at least things are kind of concrete formally. So I like picked some text and I like started going at it, brought them into her. And she was like, this is actually pretty cool. Have you considered composition? And I'm like, oh my God, I can write. I like freaked out. And then that was the point where I was like, oh wait, I should be, I think I want to be a composer.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I applied for the double degree at BU and was going to do both piano performance and composition.
Right.
And then that summer, financial fiascos happened because BU is expensive.
Right.
As institutions be,
tend to be.
And so I pulled out. Out of the school and decided to take a year off. So that year off, I found a composition teacher, Theodore, or Teddy, Ted Hein. He's going to, if he listens to this, he'll be
he'll
like,
be really
fuck?
Disappointed.
Theodore?
Who's Theodore?
Ted. I studied composition with him, or started, and I took piano with my old piano teacher. Also, if I have to turn that off, if it gets in the way, maybe I'll...
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Air conditioner was
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah, that is kind of loud.
It's
I, like, didn't even think about it until it was off.
We get so used to white noise, you know? And
right,
it's just
absolutely.
In the background. But, anyway. So, yeah, I studied with this guy on my year off and applied to other schools. And my grandma had just moved to Chicago, actually, for work. And so she's like, this city's really cool.
Yeah.
And my brother was also applying for his undergrads. So... we both applied to DePaul, and I applied to a few other, like, UConn and a few other schools and whatnot. And, well, essentially, like, DePaul happened. Like, I got somehow a really nice scholarship off of the transfer, no less.
Yeah.
And, decided to go there because my brother went there as well, or he got accepted as well. So we both headed off to Chicago. And so there I did my, I finished essentially my undergraduate and did just composition. Because I could graduate earlier with the comp degree.
It would take
longer with the piano. And I studied piano with Yelena Dirks, who was the oboe professor as well. But she was one of probably the best piano teacher I ever had in my life. And so with her and me doing, I did 20 plus, the new music ensemble under Michael Lewinsky at DePaul. So that's how I got like playing new music and performing new music.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge focus now in my solo stuff, especially with the rocking chair, which I'm, we'll probably get to later, but
absolutely.
I got really into performing new music. And so I started specializing that with piano, and then went to Roosevelt University for my master's in composition as well.
Yeah.
And so there I was, I got the teaching assistantship in theory, which is nice, and got my first church job to help cut the extra bit of tuition off. Yeah. So still got some debt, but you know.
Well, yeah.
At least not for my master's, right?
Holy crap. Yeah.
But so like that's essentially the SparkNotes version of just the, like, how
the
I
big
got into...
question. How do you?
The big question.
It's, I know it's a big question. Yeah. I always ask everyone because I like to hear everyone's sort of origin story, so to speak.
I got bit by a radioactive
piano.
Piano.
It was a weird day.
It was a strange day. And then I was like, man, I really like playing inside the piano, not on the keys.
I can't play on the keys anymore. Only inside.
Although
the piano.
Funny enough, there was one semester at my undergraduate at BU, one semester where I was like staunchly conservative.
Ooh.
Hilariously, like I somehow like went against my like high school past of like that open listening to music.
Yeah.
Cut back to like Rachmaninoff, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Brahms, and then that thankfully like
yeah
left. But I figure that's kind of funny though. Is like there was a point where I was like, what is like good music or something?
Oh my god,
it was so dumb. I was young. So young.
I was so young.
So young.
So many thoughts.
You know.
We've all been there. Yeah,
it's like that doesn't have a melody. That's not pretty. I like pretty melodies.
You know what? Even Boulez was young once. Even Boulez backpedaled from some things that he said when he was young, you know.
It's true. So he went the polar opposite.
Right. Well, you know, I think that people sort of, you know, everybody's views are, it's like politics, where it's like very much a pendulum, and lots of things are a reaction to like what came before. Mm-hmm. And so
you grow and you learn.
You grow and you learn and you explore.
You live
person.
Life.
That's right. So how did you, there are two ensembles that you play with regularly that I know of. Let me know if there are more that I don't know about, but you play particularly with Ursa Ensemble and Disquiet Music Ensemble. And so first of all, how did you get involved with these two groups?
Sure. And then Plucky Plunkers would be the newest.
And Plucky Plunkers,
that's
yes.
the newest. And so that, so let's see, I'll give histories about each of these things, right? That's what you want?
Sure. Yes, that's fine.
Tell me when I talk my mouth off
No, you can't talk too much.
So I'll start with Ensemble Disquiet, actually, because that was a really fun project. It was started with Joshua Scheid and I and Michelle Krusky when we were all at DePaul, or maybe, I can't remember, actually. Josh, let me know if you listen to this, what year we started the ensemble. Can't remember off the top of my head right now. But him and I started this ensemble where we wanted to branch essentially with classical music and also new music and really start exploring like essentially vocal music and really branching out in that field, because a lot of it tends to be fairly, I guess you could say, conservative, or like there's that tendency. But he was really, really into experimental music, especially as a vocalist. And so, like, we both just, like, started writing our own music, and we would program, like, we would do lots of fun things, right? We would actually do, like, opera scenes, and then we would have, like, commissioned work, and we would write just batshit stuff.
Whoa.
And then, like, also pair that with, like, Gershwin and Charles Ives. And, like, we were just all over the gamut. And, yeah. like, we tried to be really eclectic with our programming, and we've done, like, we did an all-female composer series. We also did our one of our favorite shows was our cabaret show that we did at Stradog Theater a while back.
Wow.
And we had a bunch of commissions for writing cabaret songs. We played Bolcom. We did all those things. I wrote mine was on Chicago Winters.
Whoa.
It was called Chicago Winter. There's a recording somewhere online. I should put that up.
You should.
I think it's... I can't remember if I put it on my website. Anyway, but... like... That's actually what got me into writing, like, cabaret songs and stuff like that, mm-hmm. which is, like, the polar opposite of the other stuff that I like to write.
Right.
But they're fun. But anyway, so, like, that's, like, Disquiet Music Ensemble. And right now Joshua is doing a master's at Boston Conservatory, which I was just there for the premiere of my large song cycle that I wrote for him mm-hmm. this year. And then, so we're kind of, like, on a hiatus in a way. Like, he's applying for DMAs. I'm going to be applying for DMAs this mm-hmm. year. And since he's in Boston, it's like, it's hard to
yeah,
keep the track
going.
It's
hard. Everybody's, you know, trying to get their education
exactly.
done and it's, yeah.
Yeah. So like we still hold our presence. We haven't posted much, but like Disquiet essentially hosted this Boston Conservatory premiere and stuff like that. So it's mm-hmm. like, that's cool that like we exist and we will probably in the future continue. But while we're getting our edumacations,
yeah.
we will we take our time. But yeah. it's our little thing, and we love it to death.
Yeah.
So that's
really cool, though. I like the idea that especially you're focusing on like vocal music and art song. I feel like I've definitely seen some, maybe not more so than in any other sphere necessarily, but I feel like I've seen a lot of resistance to. Like real innovation and like edgy stuff
yeah,
in like the vocal world sometimes.
There's that like, oh, I don't want to make those sounds with my voice.
Right.
Those aren't.
I just want to sing some Schubert. I just want to sing Schubert.
I want to sing my Rigoletto.
Right.
I mean, I love opera.
Yeah.
I definitely like.
Sometimes it needs like a.
Yeah,
what am I trying to say? A breath of fresh air.
Yeah. I mean, there's incredible composers like Kaija Sarriaho mm-hmm. has that opera. It's incredible.
God, why is she so fucking cool?
I know.
I love her. Sorry.
That's fine. I fangirl super hard about Sarriaho too. So
yeah,
it's
she's
all good.
Just amazing. I think if I ever met her, I would just pee everywhere. I would just.
Oh, and
pee.
Then like that other, oh shit! Why can't and I absolutely love the Partita for Eight Voices. Why can't I remember?
Oh, Carolyn.
Carolyn
Cha.
Oh, I feel so bad for not remembering her name.
It's
like
fine.
That.
We all have brain parts.
But like that piece is so fucking cool because
yeah.
of all the techniques and stuff like
it's,
that are in it.
It's
like the
ridiculous.
Sound world is just beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's like she kind of works it where it's like, you know, you have very interesting timbral layers and there's also spots where it's like, oh, this is very simple, pretty melody.
Yeah,
it's like,
I like that she's not afraid to like juxtapose like really strange things with really just like kind of traditionally pretty things.
Yeah,
she's like very not apologetic
wrong
about
with
it.
That.
Yeah.
It's great. Do your like it, but it's so unabashedly her, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I know that is
Carolyn. Yeah,
that's her shit.
Yeah,
but yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I love art song. I love writing songs. I'm writing actually something right now for a Schoenberg project.
Oh, yeah. I know about this project.
Yeah, so I'm writing a song for that now
mm-hmm.
from. Song number 11, was it?
This is the song that's, it's in, okay, so is, are there, there are new, there's a new song for each
of the
songs
the
in the book
songs.
Of
yeah,
the
Yeah, based
Hay
off
Gardens.
Of the, yeah, that, yeah.
Okay.
And so
okay.
I'm doing song number 12, I think. Of course, I'm like just starting it because I've been working on the other civic project
right,
and
right.
stuff. So I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta start writing that. But yeah, I have I have time.
Yeah, yeah, you're good.
I'm really
good.
Good with deadlines.
Yeah.
At least I like to try to be.
Yeah.
So, okay. So.
And then your other
Ursa
project,
Ensemble.
Ursa.
I started playing with them.
Some other
2013, mm-hmm. I think. Maybe 2014. Rachel, let me know. But the first thing we played together as an ensemble, or that I played with them, was the Brahms horn trio.
Oh, okay.
It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah.
That was like the first piece that they threw me in, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so scared. No.
Brahms.
Too many notes, Brahms. Why? Please. Please, Brahms. Double octaves, no.
Oh my God.
But yeah, that was the first time I like played with them, and I guess that like solidified enough where they were like, oh, okay, he like can play chamber music,
right.
I guess we'll keep him.
Like, I guess he's all right.
I guess he's fine. Let's play.
You'll do.
And so I've been with them for years, and we do our collaboration in concerts where we have like writers, artists,
mm-hmm.
And we collaborate with with the music, and like people are encouraged to like draw paintings. We just did one on Friday, and the artwork was stunning that came from that.
Oh, cool.
But we did it with artist Melanie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Her stuff is
gorgeous.
But so we did that. I wasn't on that cycle, but that's what we like to do. We also like to pair a lot of new music or like contemporary music with like early music.
Yeah.
We did our biggest concert, or one of our big concerts of this year, was our Delilah Shuffle, or Shuffle for Dahlia. Christ, I can't remember. But it was a concert for Planned Parenthood. It was a benefit concert,
yeah.
And so we raised money for that. And we did it in a shuffle where people got tickets, and like if their number got picked, they got to pick whatever the playlist was, and then we would play that.
Oh, that's so cool!
So we had like Rebecca Saunders on that concert, along with like Clara Schumann.
Whoa!
And, yeah, so it was just like we had a very sporadic set of music, and it was all female composers, and we raised over $1,000+ dollars for Planned Parenthood.
Holy shit.
It was a
good
great
for
turnout.
You guys.
Yeah, and so like we branch into all that territory, and we like to pride ourselves on like playing all that music and having fun with it all, you know.
Do you guys do a lot of like socially oriented, like outreachy kind of things, or is it
we're
just
working
kind
on
of
it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
But yeah, we're no Macy. No. You can't eat that.
Macy is trying to eat the crochet Cthulhu. And we have to protect Cthulhu.
I gave you a bone.
She's very cute.
Cthulhu, eat me last. don't mock him, Macy.
Okay.
But yeah, but we've kind of planned our next season and stuff, and we're gonna be doing Quartet for the End of Time again. We played it last year, which is a lot of fun. We did that with the Elgar Piano Quintet.
Whoa!
I was drenched in sweat
at the end
of that concert. I was like,
"Messiah, so much
Piano Concerto Elgar." No.
Right. Holy crap!
Oh my God.
Yeah,
but,
that's
that
like
was
a piano concert.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
My heart was just pounding the entire time.
You're like, that was my cardio.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was a good workout. But yeah, so that's Ursa Ensemble, and so
nice.
We've been just rehearsing a lot and getting our next season together, and we're going slowly but surely.
Yeah.
But like,
do you know when your next concert is gonna be?
I think actually we know definitely the next concert will happen in the Ravenswood Art Walk.
Oh, okay.
At least that'll be that's going to be a solidified concert.
Cool.
The church that I music direct at, Ravenswood Fellowship United Methodist Church,
uh-huh.
they are a host normally for the art walk.
Oh, okay.
So they have artists and stuff like that in the sanctuary, and so we're going to do a concert over that weekend.
Nice.
Which will be a lot of fun.
Cool.
And then I'll probably actually do my next rocking chair concert.
Yeah.
On that.
That was definitely my next question, was because I was reading about the rocking chair series, and I was like, What is this? Because on your, okay, so on your website, it says this series involves commissions of solo piano works to be presented alongside an interview with the composer. This is done in an effort to create an inviting atmosphere for the audience as they listen to a wide variety of musical styles and expose them to the ideas that computers, a computer.
Computer.
Jesus Christ.
We're all computers.
Well,
it's
that
the Matrix. That was a glitch. Done.
It's a glitch in the Matrix.
Agent Smith is gonna come smashing through the door.
He's gonna break his glasses.
Macy was Agent Smith.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Expose them to the ideas that composers, not computers, think about while writing. So, okay, what was like? Describe this project and like what was like the impetus for this? Were you basically like, oh my god, composers, we're so misunderstood, we need people to like understand,
we're just like a bunch of
inner
emo
life
kids,
yeah, exactly,
just like hiding in our holes, just like
no one gets us,
like, no one plays my shit. No one gets it. How did I start this? So I think part of it was I was just finishing up grad school.
Right.
And man, was I ready to be out of grad school.
Yeah, yeah.
But, because I could then also focus on Ursa and all my other projects.
Yeah.
But, what had happened was I really, really like to play, obviously, new music.
Yeah.
And I mostly do chamber music these days as a pianist. Like, all my work comes from vocal collaboration, Ursa, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I work with musicians. That's
yeah.
the bulk of my playing. And I was like, well, I don't really do much solo stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I kind of had, like, the desire, which was weird because I hate doing... I used to hate doing, like, solo concerts because
right.
I was like, oh, I have to do, like... I guess a Brahms or something, or like
right.
if I do like what constitutes a solo recital. But I was like, I really, really like playing all these composer pieces that like they asked me to like do them for the composer forums and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was always happy to do that. And I another thing that I guess kind of like bothered me, or like something that I, going back to when I was a kid in high school, it's like, why are people so against like sounds that they might not necessarily understand, or noise, or like what actually constitutes making music, and
mm-hmm.
who determines what again is like real
right,
music,
like,
and
what's
stuff
the
like
standard
that
standard of like what's
and there
acceptable.
Is just so much like, especially when you look at like composition these days, or just like music in general, there is
yeah.
just so many styles and runs
yeah.
of things. It's like, you look at, like, I don't know, indie rock, and it's, like, there's so many subset categories of that. Same
yeah.
with, like, punk rock.
And there's so much, like, crossover now.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, and, like, I've been, like, listening to rockabilly folk punk a lot lately.
That
which
is such
a which
genre.
Is a thing.
Like, holy crap.
And it's hilarious. It's, like, washboard and
that's
banjo and mandolin.
Actually sounds really fucking
grungy
cool.
Grungy fucking voices. It's great. I love it. And I also, like, really like listening to, like, fast, energetic punk music,
right?
Or
yeah,
like
yeah.
music like that has, and then I like to listen to slow classical music. I'm like all about that, like Ramatelli, super
yeah.
psychedelic, super slow atmosphere.
Yeah.
But like, if I'm gonna listen to like rock and roll, it's gotta be like high energy.
Right. Right.
Anyway, where was I going with that? Rocking chair.
Yeah.
So it kind of just came from the impulse where I was like, I want to play all these composers, and I love all their music so much, and I want to help my friends. Like, I want to...
Yeah.
It actually started, like, the first one was just called With Friends Like These.
Oh.
And I just commissioned 5 colleagues, like, good friends of mine who I wanted them. I was like, will you write me a piano piece? I'm sorry, I have no money. And, but, like, we were all
like,
in school.
Like, disclaimer, I'm broke.
We were all in school, and people were... We were all, like, they're looking for performances of their work. Because, you know, it's like, out of grad school, it's hard to start getting that momentum going and
yeah,
stuff.
And
so,
you want
to
like start getting recordings of your stuff.
So I just like started asking people, like some friends, and I was like, hey, would you be willing to like write me a solo piano piece, like kind of short? Cause I think I asked like 6 composers or something like that. So I'm like, 5 to 7 minutes. Let's
yeah.
not go crazy.
Right, right, right.
And I would, because then I was also, this is the most important part, I guess, is I want to interview you about your music.
Yeah.
Like, because I kind of like the idea. I there's certain ways to go about this, I guess, and stuff like that. But I really, really like the idea of talking with a composer or having the program notes or something, like giving an audience member that may not necessarily be exposed to this kind of stuff some kind of context or preface before they listen to a piece of music. Like, I'm not, it's like, and I don't even think it's like assuming that the audience is like dumb or like poorly educated or anything like that. That's like the point. It's like, if you're not exposed to experimental music, like you're obviously not going to be like, you're going to be a little bit intimidated because it's like, oh, all these people get it. Why don't I get it? I must be dumb.
Right.
But it's like,
I think it's more, it sounds like more like an effort to just cater to an audience that might not have previous experience.
I want everyone to experience the joy that I experienced, like when I was young, when I got really into it, where I was like, man, I like all these like fun sounds and like these combinations, and like, man, how did they make that noise on the cello or something like that? Right. It's like, I got really excited about that. So this series is like the same kind of like youth like excitement of like, let's go at this in like a fun conversational way and like experience all kinds of music
and make it seem less intimidating and less like scary.
I try to keep the atmosphere as casual as possible. Like, I don't dress up in like a tuxedo. I put like jeans and like a shirt. Like, I think I wore like a professor sweater for the last one. But like,
what do you define as a professor sweater, first of all?
I put like a nice shirt on, I put a little shirt on and then put the sweater over it and kind of look like...
And then you look like you can teach like a theory really class.
Yeah, like I teach a theory class. Let's talk about music. But the last other concert I wore a t-shirt. So it's like, depends on what I'm feeling that day. Right. But anyway. So I require most of the composers to be there. Sometimes they can't make it.
Right.
But like, I had the last one I did, the composer from Florida came to the concert and I was able to have a conversation with her and it was great.
Oh my goodness.
But, let's see, where am I going with this? So yeah, the first one is like, I just kind of like did it off the bat. Like, I was very spontaneous. I was like, I just want to play music.
Right.
So I commissioned like these six composers. I was like, I gave them something out of my pocket from the, like, what I was able to get. And then I recorded all the pieces for them afterwards.
Mm, nice.
And so that's part of my deal with the composer is I will guarantee you a professional recording.
Yeah.
At the end of this.
Nice.
And so I work with a good friend of mine and we, Garen Gottel, and we collaborate and make the recordings, and so I can give everybody like a good solid recording either for their portfolio, for their website, for any like competition, stuff like that. So it's like I want to help them as much as they've like helped me. So that's like, so that was like the impetus behind it. And then it became rocking chair because I found a rocking chair at the church.
I was gonna ask if you used an actual rocking chair.
I do. I did, and I do, but like so I put the composers in a rocking chair to kind of give that little bit of a, you can like a rock folksy, back and like, forth. Kinda... Yeah, let's have a conversation.
Like, have a conversation as I move back and forth.
And so I put them on the chair, and then I have a microphone, and then we go back and forth and talk about, like, why did you write the piece? Like, what do you like to do in music? What inspired you? What got you going as a kid when you started writing music or whenever you started writing music? Yeah. And then I normally will like end the interview with something like, what's your spirit vegetable or something like that. Like, just, you know, it's like, I don't want to ever make it be like
too heavy.
Grill or too heavy. Yeah. And I want to have fun with it. And I want them to have fun too, because composers.
I feel like go ahead.
No.
Well, I do feel like it's important to like, that's keeping it light is important because I think people think that, you know, composers and people in music sometimes approach their craft with like so much gravitas and think that we're really serious.
And I mean, like, I obviously like, I care a lot about my work, but I also am like, I don't take myself too seriously.
You also have like a crochet Cthulhu.
Exactly. And I have like a toy pianos everywhere and I have a bunch of toy instruments floating about. Like, there's just a lot of kitschy shit everywhere. And I like that. But, it's also like why I like miniature form in my compositions. I love miniature form.
Right, yeah.
As you can guess. But anyway. what was I saying? So with all this like stuff, I also try to be very eclectic with the composers that I commission.
Yeah.
And so like I'll be like, okay, like they tend to be in like the minimalist spectrum, and like this one tends to be in like like the like performance art or mm-hmm. like, you know, that experimental side. And so I try to like kind of do a whole gamut.
Yeah.
Which again, I love eclectic programming.
Yeah.
Like myself. So like I really try to, cause like if like there's something for everybody just yeah. to like sample and try. So
yeah.
That's kind of like what I go for. So I've done like three of these now.
Nice.
I've had like six composers on the first two, I think. And then, and I'll feature my own work sometimes. I'll just throw in like, oh, I have a piano piece. And then like the last one I had five composers and they wrote longer works.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what's happening is I've cut back the composers in a way and I'm now asking for longer piano pieces.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm like, I'm always trying to find the balance of like, what's the good amount of interview time versus performance time? What's going to put an audience to sleep and stuff like that.
Important points.
Yeah. And so for this fourth one, I have composer Jesse Diener Bennett, Kelly Sheehan, Luis Fernando, and another composer, Elliot Lop. I'm sorry, Elliot. but like I have four composers, I think, for this next one. And so I'm going to be aiming for around the 10-minute plus mark on the pieces. And
is it Kelly Sheehan with whom you do
Plucky Plinkers? Yeah, who I do Plucky Plinkers with. Yeah. Plucky Plinkers. Our next show is Plucky Plankers. I will explain this in a second because I think we're about to get there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is an exciting project. Anyway, but so yeah, I have these four composers. I'm still debating if I'm going to ask for a fifth, but that's going to be for the Ravenswood Art Walk this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I'll present it, or at least currently planning, hopefully. Yeah. I'm going to put it in the book so I force myself to be on top of it. Right,
a forced deadline.
Yeah, like, if I have deadlines, then I'm like, great.
Yeah.
I'll pull out a program in a month if I have to.
That's a lot how this podcast works, so
there you go. I totally get it. This was... And then you were just hoping that, like, man, I hope this guy will just say yes.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Good thing I just
don't
like,
tell everyone. They don't know that it's totally bullshit. No, I'm kidding. It's not bullshit.
I planned this like months in advance. I'm super professional.
No, they know. They figured it out. They know. They know where I'm going from.
It's fine. I'm super happy to do this. But anyway.
So tell me about. You and Kelly. And Kelly.
So Kelly
You're
and
plucky,
I...
plucky plinkers and plunkers and plankers.
We... Fuck, when did we start? So we just...
Did you, like, hit your head really hard or something? And there are many things you can't remember.
I don't know. My memory is, like, super selective these days. I'm, like, slightly worried.
Oh.
Maybe it's, like, all the bars.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm not...
He's not an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic.
But I love the hang.
Right.
After concert hang, super important.
Hang is important.
But anyway, no, I think like my memory is just super selective.
Right.
Like
you,
I put
you just jettison certain things.
All my like focus and attention goes into like quickly learning music for concerts like sight reading and
I think that's legit,
musical
honestly.
Things and writing. So it's like if I have to sacrifice some historical context. Right.
You're like,
fine.
Eh.
I'll ballpark it because I mean it's important, but it's also like, eh.
Right. Yeah.
Charles Ives like made up his whole fucking like biography, anyways. So, like, I can be the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm hoping to have a catalog of works that are like, I'll have like Green Landscape 73.
Yeah.
And then I'll be dead, and people will be like looking for like where the fuck are like 1 through 71 or 2. And
we'll
it won't
just,
exist.
Right. Yeah. You'll just be trolling everyone
mm-hmm.
from the grave.
That's the plan. But when I get there.
Yeah. First things first.
So Plucky Plunkers came from, I believe, we were at Farragut's having a drink after a concert. Mm-hmm. And this is at least what I believe happened. And we were like talking because she had just got a toy piano mm-hmm. and I've had my toy piano, like my master's thesis had a toy piano solo in it. And so like we just got onto the subject of like writing of like what if we did like a toy piano collab
because
there's not a lot of rep for it, I guess. Like there's rep, but
But it's limited.
It's limited, yeah. And, like, honestly, the whole concept of it is pretty silly and absurd to begin with.
It's a little bit of a novelty instrument.
Exactly. Like, yeah. It's really funny. And how do you make, like, I don't know, quote-unquote serious music?
When it's or, so cute.
I like... know. And so we, like, we just decided, like, hey, let's just, like, put together a program, and then we, like, came up with, like, Plucky Plunkers. This is the other fun part about our name is we change a letter every time. We've only done one show, but our next show is going to be called Plucky Plankers, and that's our sophomore slump show.
Oh.
No idea what we're going to be programming yet.
But I like that it's called Sophomore Slump.
But it's called Sophomore Slump. So I think we're going to do like a bunch of just like complexity music.
I like it.
But our first show, we commissioned composer Stephen Boy to do, because we were like, he seems like like the kind of guy who would write a toy piano duo. So we commissioned him. I found this random Michael Finnessy toy piano sonata like while I was at work one day, and then I just ordered it.
Yeah,
like it took like 3 months to get.
Holy shit!
But because it came from overseas, but like the score is absurdly large. Here,
it actually just took several strong men to get it across the ocean.
Yeah, because it's so heavy. But look how hilariously big this is.
It's as big as the piano!
Exactly. So, like, the score is as big as the piano. And I'm like, oh, this is fucking cute. So I picked this. And then, it's actually the reason I also got a second toy piano. Right. My 3-octave Schoenhut.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, which is an antique.
Schoenhut,
where is that? But, yeah, so I got a second toy piano now.
As one does.
As one does. Sorry about this cough, but
How dare you cough?
Thank you. But we put together the Finnessy. We were like, we actually started with improvisation. Like, let's improvise on the toy pianos.
Oh,
and like,
cool.
I have a bunch of auxiliary instruments like chimes and gongs and stuff. So yeah. We worked with all of that.
And that gong is the perfect size for gong. That piano.
Yeah, and I have a prayer bowl as well. But that is currently in the hands of the percussionist for the civic piece.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have it at the apartment right now. But so yeah, we like started with that, and we're like, oh, I think there's potential here. So we did our commission. We both wrote a piece each. Like my piece, I wrote on like trying to start a music box, and her piece was she analyzed the harmonic spectrum of the toy piano and then made an electronics plus toy piano piece that was cool. So like we had like a good eclectic program then.
Yeah.
So, like I had like kind of a silly piece with a lot of noise components and like some theatrics and stuff. And it's like, so like that we had a fun program. So all the music sounded a little different, which is hard to do with toy pianos. And we presented it on Saturday. Was our debut concert, Plucky Plunkers. debut, and Christopher Narlock was our super secret special guest, and he joined in on the improvise. He was surprised. It was actually like in like perfect with the whole, like he came in like with the glissando on like the bars of the toy piano. It was super spooky, and no one knew it was coming. It was great,
and everybody was like, oh my god, Narlock is here.
Oh wait,
it's a studio.
Yeah, so that was our debut concert.
That's
and
awesome.
So we're currently plotting our second one. And then our third show is going to be our hate show. Get ready. No idea what's going to be on it, but we just arbitrarily decided, like, it's the hate show.
Holy
lots
shit.
Of hate.
Okay.
No idea what's...
Just angry.
Angry. There's going to be dog masks.
Yes!
Like, it's going to be... It's going to be a hoot and a half.
A hoot and a half. I'm ready.
I'm ready
for that hoot
and
a half.
And then we have our clickbait meme show at some point.
Wait, what letter are you going to change in the name for that one? Because that's number 4.
I don't know. Yeah, we
so,
I don't
okay,
know
so it's like,
but
wait,
we have Plucky
Plankers and Plankers and then what, like Plinkers?
Plinkers eventually. Maybe then... It'll probably become like Flucky Fluckers at some point. You know, like the... The
I'm
possibilities are endless.
It's true. It's true. You
and
have a lot of permutations
so
to go through.
So we pride ourselves on being the best and only toy piano duo in Chicago.
I like it.
Currently that we know. We have not Googled anything else. We might be the world.
Whoa.
But I'm sure there's probably something in New York City.
Oh yeah.
But
I don't
they're know. They're not as spry as we are.
It's true.
Calling them out, whoever they are. Because they're going to listen to this podcast.
This is a challenge to any New York toy piano groups who think that they can outdo the plucky plunkers slash plankers slash plinkers. So step up, bitches.
This just got real. It just got real. I'll call Portland out too. They seem weird over there. Come at me.
They seem weird.
They do weird shit there.
Do you even plunk, Portland? Do you even plunk?
Get at us. Anyway, we're gonna make our Facebook page soon enough. If you saw our poster for the Plunkers show?
I don't know that I saw the poster.
It was like a really, really detailed key. Oh, it was like overly complex. It was great. Shit. And then we also dressed, like, Kelly and I dressed fairly similarly.
Nice.
So like we like had like our collared shirt with the sweater thing going on. Yes. So we both, and we wore Vans, and we're like, all right, let's go.
Yeah. So hip.
So fashionable.
Oh my gosh. Wait, do you have a picture?
Yeah. On my Instagram. Follow me.
Oh my God, you guys.
Yeah. It was pretty great.
I feel like I have a description for that in my brain, but I can't access it right now. You guys just look, you look like you listen to, like, some trip hop, like, in your bedroom where there's, like, you know, you have, like, a flannel comforter and there's a lot of navy blue and forest green.
Hmm.
That's what I imagine.
I think I can't speak for both of us, but I have a feeling it probably, we'd both agree. I'll just, like,
assume. I know that was, like, a very specific, strange description, but that's what I imagine.
It's okay.
It's the Vans that really push you over the edge.
We're real plunky.
Yeah.
At our headquarters that don't exist. Plunky Pluckers headquarters somewhere in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
It's a super secret venue that we don't have yet. Secret. But it's super secret and you don't know about
it. It's going to be great.
It's going to... So, yeah. And I think we're going to be doing a residency thing, maybe. I don't know if I should be even bringing it up, but Scappy Magazine will be recording this too.
Oh, nice, Scappy!
We're going to do a thing with Scappy. We're going to do at least a recorded component in an interview as well.
I love them.
On the Plucky Plunks.
I did an interview with Hannah Christensen
for
Zappa with them, and it was
those guys are great.
So much fun. I really like them.
Zappa's the coolest.
Everybody listen to the Scappy Mag podcast, because they're great.
Shout out to Scappy.
Shout out to Scappy. Also, wait, I meant to ask you, I almost completely forgot. So you're doing, we heard the death whistles in the beginning of this podcast. So tell me about your collaboration with Civic.
Okay. So this was really, really exciting, but, I'm working with the Civic Orchestra Fellowship players.
Okay.
And, so essentially, like, I just submit a proposal for like a piece that I'd like to write, mm-hmm. and tell them, like, you know, try to be like, hey, pick me.
Yeah.
But so my proposal for it was, I ended up just picking like the whole ensemble, mm-hmm. like minus one. I think there were two trumpets. I just picked one. I was like, I'll keep things individual. But
yeah,
I picked a large ensemble piece for to write, and it's based on Hildegard von Bingen,
mm-hmm.
who's the
Hildy.
Hildy, good old Hildy. I fucking love
that bitch.
Fucking love Hildy. Get me.
she gets me.
But like, my Hildegard kick started when, like, so for my fiance Suzanne, she's a flute player and mm-hmm. she loves alto flute, and she commissioned me to write a piece for alto flute.
Ooh.
And voice.
Yeah.
Because she can sing and play at the same time.
Ah!
In counterpoint, no less.
Whoa.
Fucking crazy. So I was like, let's do a Hildegard tune.
Yeah.
Or like base the piece on a Hildegard tune. And it was on the, it was on St. Ursula and the 10,000 Virgin Maids or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like the whole story like encapsulates like, so Ursula was going to get married to some dude, and she's like, fuck that. I want to have a relationship with God.
Ooh.
Essentially. Or, like,
Ooh.
Essentially, it's like, I don't want to be married. Like, I
want
to
do my thing. I want the ultimate
thing. The ultimate
thing. The bay on high.
The bay on high. And so, like, she sets out on, like, some huge pilgrimage, but it was also, like, an excuse to get out of the marriage.
Right,
like,
right.
And so she like, embarks on a pilgrimage with, like, her 10,000 maids.
Wow.
And, like, goes on this huge journey.
Mm-hmm.
And in Cologne, the Vikings invaded and killed them all. Just fucking slaughtered. God.
Okay.
And so that, like, that was that.
Yeah.
So kills them all, blah, blah, blah. And so the piece is based on this story.
Wow.
And I'm so sorry, Mom, for all the cursing.
She'll be okay. She's still listening.
I know she's going to listen to this. I was just thinking about it.
Sorry,
anyway.
Mom. Sorry, Mrs. Sorry, Jonathan's mom.
But I write this piece, and like it's a 5-movement piece, and I build the material around the chant line, and mm-hmm. I love chant because it's unmetered in a way, like yeah. it has that very free flowing, and yeah. I my music tends to be I love that kind of natural just rise and flow. I don't try to have metric
yeah
kind of feel like it happens. Obviously, the rhythm is rhythm, and
there's some meter, but
there's yeah. some meter. But I love free flowing. Like Takemitsu is one yeah. of my big influences. Like Toshio Hosokawa, like mm-hmm. a lot of Japanese composers I yeah. adore. But anyway, so I wrote this piece, and that was the start of it. And in the last movement, Suzanne sings and plays in fifths.
Whoa.
Which is like on the litany chant, and so like the line finally comes out at the end.
Ah, that's so crazy. Cool.
So now fast forwarding to Civic, my proposal was I'm going to write a piece on the morality play that Hildegard wrote.
Mm-hmm.
It's an hour long piece, so I really had to like pick and choose my material.
Yeah.
Quite sparsely, but it's a morality play. It's based on the morality play, where essentially the virtues help a lost spirit find its way to, you know, being virtuous and a good human being. Ooh. So it's like, what does it take to be a good human being? There is a lot of virtues. There's like 15 plus or something.
Oh my God.
So like every virtue has a thing, and like Satan like tries to like, you know, tempt the person, like, come to my side, you'll be glory, blah, blah, blah.
Right. We have cookies.
Follow me, we have cookies. Join the dark side. And then all the virtues like come in and like save this person or try to bring them to what it takes to be a good human. So my piece is based off, it's a 5-section piece mm-hmm. with the introit being like, it starts with like Satan mm-hmm. talking, and the percussionist has sand blocks and he talks in rhythm. So it's like, da, 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 like while you're talking and playing, you scratch
do
it.
The sand
so it kind of sounds rhythm. Like a snake.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. So like, I'm kind of, I like to do pretty clear imagery, I guess, with yeah. my stuff. I like I love abstract noise, but I like to have, I guess, a clear foundation personally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this start of it, and then like the virtues come in and stuff like that. So like it's the intro section, like kind of setting us up for the character of the piece. And
yeah.
so the three inner sections are based on remind myself hope, uh-huh. patience, and humility. Uh-huh. And each of these little sections is kind of a caricature uh-huh. of like that virtue, and I use the line that Hildegard wrote each of those virtues on.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm using her material as just base material for pitch and stuff, because
gotcha.
I hate worrying about pitch, so I like to have things plotted out for me, just yeah. so I can focus on timbre, color, and atmosphere.
Yeah.
That's a bigger focus for me. So so with each one, I like kind of do like little sections at me.
Macy.
Cthulhu will eat you. Eat your bone. I gave you something. She probably finished it already. Anyway, so each movement is like a short caricature, and so this is actually it goes straight through, but again I'm using kind of a miniature form to,
yeah.
which is what I'm really into to pick you to like to help with the ebb and flow of the piece, and mm-hmm. I really and like everything connects through a transition one way or another.
Okay.
And so like hope is like it's a hocket with the string quintet, and it's all on air tones, like so like the air tone, but if you can change the timbre of it.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the first section, and I had, like, this airy, fluffy, cloudy, like, texture. Whoa. And then the patience comes in, and it's all focused on, like, one note and, like, yeah. trying to, like, hit that one note.
Yeah.
And, like, settle on it, and it, like, never really does until the very end. So, you know,
I see what you did there.
Metaphor and shit. And then, like, humility, which is, like, the highest virtue of them all, mm-hmm. as they as Hildegard says, at least. But also, if you think about it, it's like having humility is...
I guess that's like a good thing.
It's a good thing. Like, you should be able to laugh at yourself. I've heard. Right?
Okay.
So, like, and then I have, like, my humility section. And then, like, Satan comes back after these three virtues are shown. And this essentially leads to... This essentially leads to the use of the death whistles, and there's a huge piano solo that happens in it that is like just a brutal, brutal like section of music that is actually like, I listen to a lot of Grisé's Vortex Temporum at this point. And funny enough, like I like to use like timbre quotes from a lot of composers. Like there's a, there's like parts of, I could like list off, like I have like Kate Soper, Dai Fujikora, Luigi Nono, Grisé, like Sarriaho, like little thing, like bits and pieces of composers that I love, certain sounds that they make, and I like will like kind of fluctuate them through the piece and stuff like that. Wow. But so like this piano solo is like my little Grisé Vortex Temporum thing.
Okay.
And then the last section of the piece is the humility like big quotation. And what's really cool about it is in the score that Hildegard wrote, the only time in the piece that, so normally her big motivic thing or her footprint is the perfect fifth to the fourth, so to complete the octave, so D to A to D, like that was like a very Hildegard thing in her music. So then the last piece comes in, and this section's really, I got excited about this because the only time in this piece, like when humility like does like a big anthem, essentially against like, fall back, Satan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the only time in the piece where she does two perfect fifths, like D to A and A to E.
Ooh.
Which, and if you think about it in, like, the 12th century, that's fucking huge.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And so, the whole piece is, the last section of the piece is the string quintet, like the two violins, viola, cello, bass, all in perfect, it's a quintal harmony, all on based on the fifths, and it's just the whole motion of it going up. So it's the chant line, but it's all in the quintal harmony, so it's like this kind of really ethereal effect. And so like that's kind of the
cool.
That so that's the basis of the piece. Oh, and then I forgot to mention the death whistles. So quick story behind it, friend of mine Daniel Fawcett was in Chicago and he texted me. He's like, hey, I have like, I'm in Chicago and I have like a gift for you, where can I leave it? I was like, oh, just drop it off at St. Vinny's, I'll
Saint
get
Vinny's.
Up later Vinny. And I got to the church and I opened the box and I'm like, oh my god, these are death whistles. Like I because he had used them, or he had done them in a piece with another ensemble, so I at least like knew what they were. And so he gifted me them. And then I decided, like, last minute, because I had finished the piece almost at that point, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put the death whistles in and the piano solo. So when the piano solo happens, the wind players blast out the death whistles. And then I also decided then after the workshop that I would... maybe I shouldn't, like, give it all away. So, like...
Can give away as much as you want, as much as you feel comfortable.
There's a lighting component.
Okay, okay.
There's a lighting component now that I added to the piece, because they were like, do whatever the hell you want. And I was like, let's do it. So, like, there's, like, a very spooky thing that happens with the piano solo.
Yeah.
I will give probably, like, a warning for those who are, like...
Who get scared of the...
Get scared of the dark.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, so there will be a warning, obviously.
Right, right.
Because I don't want anyone to, like...
freak out.
Yeah.
The lights go out.
Especially when the screaming starts, because that is, it's not settling.
Yeah.
It really is jarring, especially if you haven't heard it. And so anyway, so that's the piece. May 28th at 7:30.
Oh, my God.
At Bunt Rock Hall at CSO, or Symphony Center.
Put it on your calendars.
Put it on your calendars. Children. It's going to be a hoot. Because there are also three other composers who are going to, that have works in this as well, who are absolutely incredible. And like they selected, you know, like these four composers, like me and the three others, to collaborate with the fellowship and like write our pieces and stuff. And like everyone sounds so different. It's going to be really cool. I think it actually might be 7 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah, I should really check my calendar. But if you type in Symphony Center or Civic Orchestra and Composers Project, you can... A quick Google search will give you the actual time. Yeah,
would it probably be somewhere on like
or the on CSO, the side of like 7 o'clock? Civic, yeah, it's on the Civic on the site. Civic website. I'm pretty sure it's 7 o'clock. It's in my phone at 7. This is like Google Calendar runs my life, and I also have a little notebook where I write things down.
I am very much a like written planner person. I kind of hate Google Calendar, and I know a lot of people use it. And I
use Google Calendar, but I've also started using a little notebook that I write my to-do list on because I forget things, and I'm like,
I think the process of having to write it down helps you remember as well.
Yeah, it does. We covered a lot.
This is great.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I hope I haven't been like too.
No. Are there any other like projects or performances you have coming up in the next like couple months that you're excited about?
So there's the Schoenberg project, which will be happening, which is really exciting. Ursa Ensemble's got some big stuff happening for the fall. Plucky Plunkers will probably have stuff for the summer. Oh, I'm doing a residency with the Lake Effect Quartet, which is a clarinet quartet. Oh, yeah.
Wait, you guys are going to Avalok.
Yeah, we're going to Avalok.
Wait, when are you going to Avalok?
We're going in August, late August to September. Yeah, so I'll be doing that with them. And then I'm going to have a cabaret song that I wrote. It's called Lament for Public Transit. And that's going to get premiered actually in Boston this week. And then the big premiere will be in Paris, or not Paris, somewhere in France, which I now can't remember. I'm sorry, Nicholas. But it's at a music festival in France. Oh, cool. And it's going to be with Sophie Boyer and Nicholas Colombot. Apparently, like, there's like 160 tickets already sold. Holy shit. I'm like, whoa.
You're going to be famous.
I'm going to be famous. That's going to be my first international performance, my gosh. Actually. So that's exciting.
Yay.
Yeah. He's like, we want a cabaret song of an American composer writing in like a French style.
Oh my God. Because
then they commissioned a French composer to write in like an American cabaret style. So I wrote in like the French cabaret style, right. In quotes. And it was like, I wrote just a story about missing the train, like, you know, and then like rain falling down on you because, you know, the train came 2 minutes early. There was someone like with lots of bags blocking the way, and the typical like transit problems.
Transit lamentations.
Yeah. Okay. So that's happening. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. And then I had my Boston Conservatory song cycle that I wrote for Joshua Shai, The Disquiet, that got premiered in Boston 2 weeks ago now, almost 2 weeks ago. So yeah, it's
nice.
It's been productive.
Yeah, but, you're I guess keeping busy.
Trying at least. But yeah, so Rocking Chair for the fall, Ursa for the fall, Lake Effect Quartet, and any summer projects that I'll pick up along the way. I want to collaborate with people and stuff. Anyway,
Your website is it just Jonathan? Yeah,
JonathanHanno.com.
Okay,
my name spelled out and
.com. Excellent.
And I have a SoundCloud, which is on my website, and I have a Twitter that I barely update, and I'm on Instagram, I guess.
Yeah,
do I have to like give all those tags? Is that like a thing that people do in podcasts?
I mean, it's a thing you could do. It's a thing you're allowed to do.
Follow me on Instagram.
Yeah, on Insta. I'm trying to become Insta
famous.
What's your little handle on Insta?
It's JAHannow. It's not very clever.
No, that's fine. I don't think it has to be clever.
No,
mine's very not clever.
Or you can type in my name. I'm sure it'll pop up. I don't know how Instagram works.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, for sitting down with me and
thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God, of course.
I had a great time.
Yay!
This is Odd Pod.
This is Odd Pod, you guys.
Thanks again for tuning in.
Thanks for listening.
Next week, we will...
Next week, we won't be doing anything because this is a bi-weekly podcast.
Bi-weekly, we will have the world's quietest band.
The quiet quieters. All right, I'm cutting us off.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Come back Thursday, May 18th to hear my interview with Scotty McNeese, founder of Uncanned Music and A&R director at International Anthem.